There are parts of most parents' lives that are hidden from their children. In 1988, Ben Cheever wanted to learn more about his father, the late Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist and short story writer John Cheever. So Ben edited a book of his father's letters. The collection includes John Cheever's letters to and about such literary figures as John Updike, Malcolm Cowley, Robert Penn Warren, Saul Bellow, and Philip Roth. There are also some very personal letters written to his wife and to the women and men who were his lovers. And for Ben, the most difficult revelation that came out of these letters was the extent of his father's homosexuality. I asked Ben Cheever to read one of his father's letters that was about father-son relationships. The letter was written to a man who was one of John Cheever's lovers.
Dear blank, comma, I'm truly sorry to hear about your father, and I'm much too old to have anything fresh or useful to say. I felt that I must strike some peace with my own father, although we both tried to kill one another. I made him into Leander and struck a useful peace after his death. I think you must do something of the sort. You must try to understand the man. I've told my own sons that when they find me lacking, they can continue to love me and find other men who will wear underwear, pitch no-hitters, and invent the telephone. It seems to work. I think I've known no man who has not accomplished this.
Did he, by the way, directly or indirectly, make that clear to you that when you found him lacking, to continue to love him and look for the traits that you were missing in other men?
Well, he did say that he had had many fathers and that I should try and have many fathers too. Interestingly enough, my relationship with him was sufficiently intense that I rarely had an older mentor, and I'm only beginning to make good friends with older men now that he's gone.
Were you afraid when you were going through the letters that your father wrote that you'd find information about how he felt about you, information that might surprise or disturb you? And did anything like that happen?
Well, I was afraid. It wasn't as clear as that. But yes, I think I was afraid that I would have to come to grips with things that would make me uncomfortable, and certainly I did. Part of the good news of my father's life is that he loved a lot of people. He loved a lot of people passionately. He loved a number of women, and he loved a number of men. This is good news, because he was also lonely sometimes, and I'm pleased to know that he loved all these people. At the same time, I'm not so big that I'm not a little jealous and a little hurt by the letters that he wrote to young men he loved. He was often very loving to me, but he was very passionately in love with some of these guys.
You know, in trying to think about, because I know that you say that the most disturbing revelation about the letters for you was the extent of his homosexuality, and it never occurred to me, but I see that now, that one of the things that would have disturbed you was a sense of jealousy that he had lovers who were probably around your age.
Well, that's right, and it's odd. You know, I certainly wouldn't have wanted him to consummate his relationship with me in the way that he consummated his relationship with some of these other men. At the same time, it raises serious questions. I've been told by some of the men he was in love with that he would talk about me sometimes as someone who was physically attractive to him. I was completely unaware of this when it was going on because he was very stern in his public denial of bisexuality throughout most of his life. But it raises some interesting I wonder, because a lot of the time, the way he was, when he was angry at me, some of the time he was angry at me because I was a pest. I think all children are, having children of my own. But some of the time he was angry at me because he loved me. And I was just reading his journals, and there's an incident in which I went to pick blueberries. I guess I was 11 years old. And I don't even remember the friend I went to pick blueberries with. It wasn't someone I particularly liked. And I come back from picking blueberries, and he's sore at me because I haven't picked a lot of blueberries. Well, I didn't know why he was angry at me. Well, it turns out he was angry at me because he thought I was off in the woods with this other kid doing something unspeakable. Well, I wasn't, you know. I don't know what we did. We just didn't find a lot of blueberries. So that's very confusing for me. When I play back my life, where was he, you know, what was love and what was hate? What was genuine disappointment, and what was his projection of his own problems on me? It's hard to figure out. I'm sure it's hard for any son to figure out.
Were you jealous that attention he was paying to other lovers was attention that he could have been paying to members of his family?
Well, one of his lovers, who I talked with, and some of them, a couple of them have been very friendly and are friends, said that to me. He said, I felt that I was taking love from your father that maybe you or your sister or your mother could have had. And I really feel, and I say in the introduction, that you have to take the people you love pretty much the way you find them. You can't say, gee, he would have been wouldn't have been wonderful if he'd never had a drink. Wouldn't have been wonderful if he'd never loved another man or another woman. Well, he wouldn't have been himself. And love isn't, it's not like marbles. You have three of them and you give one to, you give one to someone and then you don't have one to give to someone else. It's a mysterious thing, and I think probably his love, the love that he had from these people enriched his life, and the joy he got from it probably enriched mine. But I don't mean to say that, having come to this understanding, that I'm not capable of petty jealousies, and because I am. But I think when you really examine it, as I had to, you realize that any dramatic change in him would have also changed the man I loved in ways that might not have been fortunate.
My guest is Ben Cheever. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Back to our 1988 interview with Ben Cheever, recorded after he edited a collection of letters by his father, the late writer John Cheever. Ben wrote the introduction to the book. Here's a short reading.
The introduction is titled The Man I Thought I Knew, and it begins, "When my father stopped breathing, I tried to start his lungs again by blowing air through his lips. Then I put my arms around him. My mother and sister joined in the embrace. I could hear my sister and my mother crying, and then I could hear myself. We were standing at the end of the bed when the man from the funeral home arrived. All three faces were wet with tears. My father was naked except for a fresh white cast on one leg. He had taken a bad fall earlier in the week. His skin was pale and luminous like parchment, and I remember thinking that it looked as if it still had many years of wear in it."
I was wondering if it was very hard for you to write that, in the sense that I think when you're the son of a famous writer, that it's easy to feel in the shadow of your father, at least for a while, and to wonder, what would they think if they read this? And here you were actually describing the moment of his death. Was that hard to do?
Well, interestingly enough, this book wasn't hard in that way, because he wasn't here to write it, you know. If he'd been here to write his description, that would have been fine, and I wouldn't have tried. And I tried because he wasn't here. And I mean, the part I like best in the introduction is a little bit later on in the first page. The Undertaker comes, and the Undertaker is as I guess they usually are, he's rough with the body, you know, with his sacred body. And as he got ready to put it in his station wagon, I said, be careful with him or he'll bite you. And he turned to me and said, don't worry about me, I handled Rockefeller. And I said, but Rockefeller was dead. And I really felt in working on this book, and I still feel very strongly, that my father is not dead in the sense that I had always understood death before that afternoon. It may be that nobody dies in the way that, I know I sound like a crank spiritualist, but it may be. I don't burn candles and I don't. But there were periods of time in my life when I didn't get along with him. There was a period of about 7 years when we only spoke in curt telegraphic sentences. And in many ways, he was gone from me more then than he is now. It's changed for him. That's the hard part. It hasn't changed for me as much as it's changed for him. He can't write anymore. If he was alive, we'd be finding manuscripts somewhere. But I do think, you know, I run a lot, and I'll come around a bend in a park, and I really, honestly will expect to see him there.
In your introduction, you actually, in your preface, in your acknowledgments, you mentioned that your wife is going to learn something reading this, and that is that in one of your rages while writing the book, you actually broke the leg of the old wooden rocking chair and you glued it back together without telling her about any of this. And it made me wonder, what were those rages about when you were writing this book?
Well, I'm not sure what they were about. I think that, there was something that I was trying to consummate, and I'm still not sure whether I have or not. I'm trying to deal with what's happened to Daddy, and I'm trying to deal with the things that I'm trying to deal with missing him. I don't know how to explain it. When I would go, I would work on these letters for a couple of hours, and just sitting alone, I typed them into a computer, reading them, typing them, I would feel like he was around, because he's really there in the letters. You can smell him, you can taste him. I think even if you don't know him, certainly if you did. And then I'd get done, and I'd cry. First I thought, well, it's just because I miss him so much. And then the other day, my wife was writing something and wanted me to read her a line from a Hausmann poem. So I looked up, it was To an Athlete Dying Young, I looked up the Hausmann poem and read it to myself before I called her and read it to her. And I cried then, too. So maybe it's just the beauty. But yes, it has been, still is, a very painful thing for me to do. It is my hope that this book will be useful for other people who want to do whatever they're doing, come to terms with their lives and their fathers. It's also my hope that finally it will have been useful to me. But hard, yes, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. I'm middle class, so I don't know hardship in the way that many people in the world do. But I've run a lot of marathons. I've certainly had lots of failures in my life. I've had a divorce. And nothing's been anything like as hard as this. And I'm not sure why. Maybe I didn't know that there was such a thing as death, and I had to deal with that. And maybe it has to do with the fact that I thought my father was the rock bed of my understanding of the world, because he was so candid and because he told such gorgeous stories, not just when he was writing, but when he was talking. And to have found that there was so much that I didn't know, didn't understand about him, has kind of shaken my faith. I hope to establish a new and more secure faith as the result of this work. I'm not sure I have yet.
Ben Cheever recorded in 1988 after he edited a collection of letters written by his father, the late writer John Cheever. Ben Cheever is also the author of the novels The Plagiarist and The Partisan. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.